everybody. This is Katrina and I here, and we're going to talk about mental health, mental well-being, mental resilience, balance within ourselves. Who knows what to call this sense of being at ease, peaceful, and content. I read all the articles and they seem to be talking about something that's outside of me. You know, when I try and make sense of this in my own life, it's a description of diseases and how long you're miserable before it counts as depression, and anxiety that has to amount to panic attacks. And it never describes fearfulness or loneliness as mental health, like not being lonely as being an integral part of how we feel about ourselves in the world. So I'm kind of thinking what, and please, everybody, let me know what it means to you to feel mentally sound. You know, once we say, oh, she's a sound head. I don't know whether that's just an Irish thing. It's a quality. It's not a list. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. When I read about mental health, it turns out to be a list of if you have this, this, this and this, then you're depressed or schizophrenic or bipolar. And they often don't fit with how I feel or my patients feel. They often have a sense of permanence about them that I don't find in my own life or in my patient's life. So, for instance, people can have a severe nervous breakdown. Their lives are shattered for several months. And the expectation is that, now that person has a mental health problem instead of that person's coping mechanisms were overwhelmed and they needed rest in order to figure out some better ones and make better use of the ones that they already have. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. Good. So we're looking for contentment, peace, connection. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did like the word resilience, but even that doesn't really hit the button for me. And it's all these words then get overused so that, you know, they become just as meaningless anyway. I would say connection has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I would say judgment has a lot to do with it.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, that was that. I'm going, oh, as well.
Oh, yeah.
And who is the most judging?
Us.
Us, me. I don't judge you. You don't judge me.
But judge
we're
ourselves.
Really good at it. Yeah.
We're really good at doing
how
it
how did
ourselves?
That happen? Okay. Oh. And the other thing that strikes me about this whole field of what comes up when people search or read books or whatever is that things that are not very well kind of referenced or that don't seem is nature, the resounding effect of stroking a leaf, looking at a wave crashing, seeing the horizon. Like when I lived in London, I used to go down to the Thames because it was the only place I could see a horizon without buildings. I don't know how I managed there for 20 years. Anyway, and connection with others. Mm-hmm. And more that includes animals, you know, that are very, I see patients all the time who, you know, at the end of the consultation, I say, did anything else change in your life? No, except that my dog died. And I go, oh my God. And it'll turn out to be, I think everybody who loves dogs has the dog, you know, the one that just got them, that looked in their eyes, you know, they all bring something. They all bring a mixture of things, but often there's one that's in my life, it was Tigger. Okay. Now listen, you can all resonate with this or not. Not everybody resonates with everything. So feel free to pick and choose. And that's another thing. It's diversity. No, people come in and say, you know, well, one common thing that they say is I want to come off my medication. And I say, what's the story? What story is behind this? And every story is different, right? And the advice for everybody is different. There's some advice which is very consistent. Don't suddenly change your, stop your medication if you're on mental medication for your mental health. That's the consistent story, right? But then there's the, what do you want medicine to do? There's a whole other story that evolves from that. Other things that I kind of, is a recurring theme for me, is hugging trees, and particularly in spring, and particularly birch trees, because you can nearly feel the sap rising, right? You can feel the life energy, right, as the liquids are sucked up from the ground, because the buds are about to burst into life, and literally burst into life. And you can feel that in the trees, and it's very hard not to feel connected. All right. Now, any tree is good. Mm-hmm. And take a piece of paper and a pencil and, you know, outline the bark of the tree. Mm-hmm. And they're all so different. You know, you just see. And one of the analogies that I've read somewhere, this is in mine, is that we're all like trees bent by the wind and the weather and the whatever. You see a tree that grows straight up. Everything is symmetrical. Everything is that more beautiful than the one that struggled in a gale force Atlantic wind? or is smaller than the next one? Or, you know, the one where one half of the tree has died and the other is still living? You know, like that's so inspiring, you know, that we don't have to be perfect and symmetrical to be not judged. All right. And in fact, often that's what's appreciated, and that's what gives us the resilience. Now, that's a good word for resilience. Okay. I've mentioned the horizon therapy and grounding. You know, there's all this stuff that you can buy about grounding, but I'm kind of going, take your shoes off. Walk on grass, walk on hummocky grass, walk on, you know, walk in your flower beds, walk on sand, you know, I mean, be safe, don't walk where there's glass. Like, I'm going to presume that people have a level of common sense. But wherever possible, you know, if you're having your cup of coffee or your cup of tea out on the patio, stand on the grass for a couple of minutes while you're drinking your first cup of tea. And that way you get the sunlight on the back of your eyes. So sunlight is also very important. So being grounded and making use of whatever parks are in your surroundings. You don't have to live in the countryside. There's always green spaces. Right, then none of them are perfect, but there's always green spaces, so make use of them. Food, good healthy food is very important. It doesn't mean you never eat a Kit Kat, but you have 80% of good food, and that means that you're well nourished, you're fed, your brain cells have enough the basic materials to make their nervous system connections, and you do they all know them by now? Sardines, mm-hmm. avocados, mm-hmm. nuts and seeds, and one or two avocados a week, three teaspoons of nuts and seeds a day. Now, a teaspoon is 2 almonds. This isn't the packet of almonds. and the Mediterranean diet would be is the most researched, the best effort, and that includes the olive oil as well. Now, mental health, I think you might think anxiety, they're all connected with each other because they all mean unhappiness, right? We want to be reasonably happy. You know, we can't be deliriously happy all the time. One of the things that medicine, I don't ever remember having a lecture on addiction in medical school.
No.
And I, like all the, I'm currently doing all my CPD for the next year of, you know, registering in general practice as a medical practitioner. And very little in any of the CPD talks or workshops or anything. And what's the most common thing that makes people miserable is addiction.
Mm.
Okay. It can be to substances, like the one that's most recognized is alcohol, narcotics, but also experiences that stimulate the reward centers, like gambling, shopping, exercise, work.
Mm.
Okay. Some of these are more approved of by society than others. You know, people are often praised for being workaholics, unless you happen to be their partner at home or their children, you know, who, you know, they will recognize the problems. And the fact that the person is so disconnected with themselves that they're not enjoying life, they're so busy. There's virtually always judgment behind that. Judgment about success and recognizing only work-related rewards as success, all right? And becoming your making work your identity. That's your pass card in the world, you know.
But can I just ask you one question there about addiction? Do you think as well that addiction comes from like a hereditary, you know, whether it's in the family where there would be an addiction through a family sort of situation, that there would be a behavioral more sort of...
This comes from the whole nurture nature debate. I don't have any researched answer for that.
Mm.
Misery brings misery.
Yeah.
You know, absent and distant parents mean very disconnected people, children who are very kind of disconnected from themselves. Mm. And, you know, so hard to know the other. And for every individual, it's different.
Yeah, I suppose.
There are lots of people whose parents are alcoholics and they're not alcoholics.
Yeah.
Many, many people, like more than average, if they have alcoholic parents, they'll have an addiction of some kind, and maybe not necessarily
alcohol. But you do hear of the addictive personality, do you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would describe myself, I mean, I'm going to come out of the closet here,
mm-hmm.
as a food addict.
Yeah.
Going back to being a toddler, okay? Mm. And I'll explain a bit more about that. I wish this was all theoretical stuff, but it's not. So addiction, and I define addiction according to craving that you can't control. Even though you know that whatever the craved experience is, even though you know it's harmful, and you can't stop it.
It's like smoking.
Smoking, alcohol, drugs,
whatever.
Sex, shopping,
food,
exactly. Not broccoli. I'm not addicted to broccoli. I'm not addicted to sardines either. There's
I actually like broccoli.
Yeah, I like broccoli, but I'm not addicted to it. Yeah. I call it this food with breaks and food with no breaks. And broccoli, a good serving of broccoli, and I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, if I haven't had vegetables for a few days, I'm going, I need vegetables,
mm-hmm.
right? And I realized this. Oh, I don't know, a good 20, 25 years ago. And I realized, no, I have to eat good food. There might be a whole lot of other stuff, you know, on the way home from work, stopping for chocolate or whatever.
Yeah.
But I eat the good food, right? And that's one of the coping mechanisms. And everybody kind of gradually has. I don't think there's any one solution solvable. There's ways of dealing with things that make it more manageable.
Mm.
But the medical profession, well, what answers? You know, 12-step programs. Sometimes I wish everybody had a reason to go to a 12-step program. Because the 12-step program is a way of living that keeps you out of trouble. It's a way of living skillfully rather than just reacting to your impulses.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's about being contained within yourself, not spreading your shit everywhere, looking after your own side of the fence.
Mm.
Speaking in the I this, not you, and you're doing this to me and they did that to me, right? Mm. If anybody is in doubt, and the one that I kind of refer people to because it's under-recognized, everybody knows about AA and it's very well resourced throughout there. And I have to say thank you to all the church venues that host AA meetings. Mm-hmm. They're the backbone of AA, and tremendously supportive, you know. I think a lot of addiction is related to the amount of responsibility that people have, that it's their escape valve. Yeah. Because they're trying to hold, whether it's just being responsible for holding themselves together, or for many women who are looking after children, going to work, minding parents, coordinating between parents who are minding their children. You know, it's not all give, but they're the linchpin that hold the family together. And I know men have been much better at showing up, but they show up in tell me what to do and I'll do it, which is, you know, like they'll do the dishes, they'll hoover, they'll get the shopping, they'll do this, but they do tasks. Now I know from delivering the book that I've recently wrote that there's a big difference between holding everything in your head, coordinating it, getting the balance right, getting the tone right, and actually doing tasks related to writing a book. You know, like applying for the ISBN number or whatever, you know, or communicating with publishers. That's just my most recent example. So the responsibility, the complexity is very related to the degree of craving. Mm. Okay. An escape valve. And I don't know anybody who has addiction who isn't well into the judgment, right? So that leads us to the expectation. And I think one of the things that I've learned to appreciate is that you can't have the same expectation of everybody, because everybody has their own story.
For sure.
And this has taken me. So this is what we would call the constitution or the terrain, or what it is that has people suspended in that, in individual second by second biochemistry, physiology, levels of tension in the tissues. What is it that influences those on a moment by moment basis? So we call that the constitution. You know, if you go down to cell level, I call it the terrain. Mm. All right, so it's the longer I live, the more I realise that we didn't arrive here out of nowhere, out of thin air. Should we come from the ancestors? Mm. And in the industrialised society, we're so divorced from that. And yet it's like, hold on a minute, that doesn't make sense, right? That there's a continuous thread of energy which is understood by every indigenous people, and we think, oh, that's because they're indigenous people, without being cognizant of the fact that, hello, we're indigenous people. It gets complicated because people travel all over the world. There's migration, there's forced migration, there's economic migration, there's curiosity, there's armies, there's, like, it gets very, very complicated. But that doesn't mean that thread isn't there. It's all the complexities of those. It's more, the longer I live, the more it's like a cord rather than a thread. Mm. You know, if I live to be 90, it'll probably be a rope. So anyway, the answer, and the other thing that then is adverse childhood events, and there's an adverse event childhood event score that Katrina is going to put at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I'll put a link to it. Yeah.
And this is a scoring system of 10 points that tell you whether your experiences in childhood, they're markers for challenges that are very unlikely not to have mental balance, resilience issues as an adult.
Well, it says here, the standard 10-question test does not account for all trauma, such as community violence, poverty or racism. So there's, you know, the quiz highlights potential impacts of early traumatic experiences on adult health and helps build awareness not a clinical diagnosis.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Okay. So we started this with expectations. So I did I was at a workshop with Gabor Maté, and many listeners might be familiar with Gabor Maté, when he was in Cork. It was before COVID, I think. And he talked about these ACE, this ACE score, and I thought, oh, will I do it or not? Mm. I had a fair idea it was going to be pretty shit. But I did. I partly did it. And by the time I got past not having a mother, because my mother died when I was 2, mm-hmm. And very interesting, I think I actually registered it all when I was about 18 months. I always thought it was 18. I was 18 months when she died, but like 10 years ago, I realized I was 2 years and 2 months. But I think the loss registered with me. You know, I can't prove this, but I just have a feeling that this was to do with 18 months. So anyway, so and I was also abused by a neighbor. And thankfully, I think for somebody who's been so unlucky, I've actually been very lucky, mm-hmm. right? And that has been with me forever. That's kind of part of my instincts, right? There's pretty much a happy ending at the end of all of this, isn't there, Katrina?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But this is about putting together the threads and the narrative, and we all have a different narrative. And coming back to the expectations, this to me explains several things about my life. It explains why there were whole periods of my life when getting out of bed and achieving one or two tasks was a major success, right? Of survival, right? But also, it also explains that I'm a food addict, but a very highly functioning food addict. Because I've used this analogy for a lot of patients over the years, and you can see in people's eyes when they kind of go, oh yeah, right? But many of them would have said, oh gosh. And if you can imagine one of those houses on a riverbed on stilts, because twice a year the river floods, right? So you know the ones I mean. They're in not in Ireland, right? Although it might happen with the climate change. Mm. So they're on four equal stilts, and then the house is up there and people climb up the ladder. Now, if you've had a very wobbly start, either because of a difficult birth, a disability, being orphaned, being adopted, mm-hmm. Having a parent with particularly a mother who is physically there but absent, you know, there's lots of, and they're all individual. There's also, Gabor Maté describes this, there's also people who feel very anguished during their adult life, and they look back and they feel very bad because none of these big events happened to them. Somehow there was some of their basic emotional feeling recognized, they might have moved a lot, like with an army family. There might have been complications in the house. There might have been nothing to do with them or even their parents. Like there might have been other, and it's like the accumulation of small cuts, which led to a disassociation, right? And this has only emerged fairly recently, right? This thing of consistently and repeatedly, you know, it's like, you know, if somebody's relative comes home drunk twice a year, that's not a big issue. You know, and but if they do that consistently, then that registers as a big series of events.
Yeah, you were saying there, Gabor Maté, and it's trauma isn't just big events; it can be small emotional wounds over time, like you're saying.
Thank you. Okay. So we're going to go back to the house on the four legs.
Okay.
Right. So if somebody has had this trauma, then they often overdevelop their talents. So you've got one leg, which is thicker and firmer and more deeply embedded. And then there's two normal size legs, if you're lucky, right? But most people would have two. And then there's one leg that's very feeble. It's all wobbly. And people strengthen and thicken their talons so that they can hide the wibbly-wobbly one, so that nobody notices how vulnerable they are. Vulnerability. How can we talk about contentment and peace without talking? I knew there was a big word missing in here. Okay. Now, there'll be lots of other words. This is just, you know, a half an hour podcast. But it's just to kind of lift people away from this clinical diagnosis, you know, that if it doesn't fit the clinical diagnosis, or if your story doesn't fit, that means it's not real. Do you know? So it's and maybe to give people clues, or to give people just that sense of, if you do your ACE score and it turns out to be above the level of that a child could be reasonably expected to contain, mm-hmm. well then, darlings, lower your expectation of yourself. You know, if you have times when it's really hard to get out of the bed and you can't make it, then, you know, don't worry. You know, that's just because you need to rest because you're trying too hard, you know. Or if you feel stuck in your job, get help and see if there's something that you can do. If you're not communicating well with your children or your partner or whatever, do some reflection about why that might be and see if you can. I'll come on to some ways of solving things. Some clues. I don't know how other people can solve things. I'm still working on my own, darlings, do you know? But that, and one of the things is, I mean, clearly for me, my abilities were, I was very lucky. As I say, for somebody unlucky, I was very lucky. I was clever and I could play sports. And in Ireland, you know, they're your two winning factors all through school. And so much so that, I mean, it was one of the reasons that got me into medical school. You know, but the connection to self and realistic expectation, they were very adrift. I'm still catching up with them. Okay, the other thing that the books and the Google articles and the YouTubes and all the rest of it, they say, well, this is what you need to do, right? And we all know what we need to do. We need to move, we need to get into nature, we need to take our shoes off, we need to go to bed, we need to stop, you know, eating crap and drinking too much and doing things to blur the pain, right? But the more we feel the pain, the more resistance there is. Right. And people don't, they say, they kind of go, I know what I should do, but I can't do it, you know. And one of the things that I would say is that's to be expected. That's part of it. Mm. Don't fight it. Mm. Just see if you can find little sneaky ways around it. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the sneaky ways of getting around it are, you know, if you want to do 20 minute yoga in the day, the minute you wake up, you just kind of, that's it, legs out of bed, not thinking about it, just hitting the mat, right?
Yeah, but some people do be on autopilot though with that. They, you know, it's like, and I can really, I'll talk for myself here, it's like, get up, get ready, go to work, come home, have the dinner.
Yeah.
You know, it's that routine. Yeah. It's routine.
We love routine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very reassuring.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you know you need to move more, mm-hmm. right? But you do all your routine, mm-hmm. but you get to bed and you haven't, you know, you've driven to work, you've got the lift up and down, and the movement is the one thing that you haven't done, and you're kind of going, I didn't even move today. Yeah, should have gone to the swimming pool, should have gone to the thing, it didn't go to the gym, da, 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 da. You know, so I'm just kind of saying, you expect it, you respect it, mm-hmm. it's trying to protect you, all these things are trying to protect you from little you being hurt, right? So now for other people, they might need to paint or to draw,
yeah,
because it makes them feel good. Mm-hmm. But they can't do it. Now, a trick around that might be to get one of those colouring books. Do you know? Like, you try and you kind of go, okay, I can't do that. I can't write the poetry, or I can't do the sewing, or I can't get out to the garden, right? Whatever is your thing, right? For some people, it's setting the table beautifully for a meal, right? And I'm not talking about being, you know, Frida Kahlo. You know, I'm talking about being just that little bit of artistic in your life.
Creativity.
Yeah. Very important. Now, some, and obedience is another thing we can get addicted to. you know, doing what we're told,
yeah.
right? Oh, you're good at maths, so you go and do architecture or engineering or whatever, when really they're a poet in their soul.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
then you get stuck in this way of... Now, one of the things, I'll come back to it when it's about making a living. Okay, so food, movement, get moving, nature, music, sleep. Sleep is very interesting. Imagine we've had all of these difficulties and challenges in life, and yet every night we lie ourselves down and we become unconsciously oblivious. That's trusting the universe. Now, I presume we've put the lock on the door, and you know, and if we're lucky enough to be in a safe environment, right? But isn't that extraordinary?
It is, definitely, yeah. We all go to bed, we all sleep, like.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't know why, what it does.
I know, you talked about this before, yeah. about sleeping. Yeah.
We don't know what it does.
Yeah.
It's vital,
yeah.
but we don't know why. And this is one of the things where, I mean, I love all the science, the REM sleeps, the waves, the whatever. It's I love all that knowledge. And we'll develop more of it, you know, and I welcome it. Mm-hmm. But we don't sleep because the science knows what it does. We don't need sunshine because we know that it alters the pigment, the radiation, these waves and those waves and the others. We need sunlight because we evolved with sunlight. We need sleep because we evolved with sleep. And it's lovely to have all this information, but it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is trust. Many people who are chronic insomnia, there's a vicious loop with anxiety. Letting go, they can't let go. So, yeah, the two things about not letting go is not being able to sleep and not being able to poo.
Yeah. I'll also say adapting to change as well, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, change, our lives change
yeah.
so much.
I've just spent a week in three different beds, you know, in Dublin, Belfast and a retreat that I've just come back from. Oh, and just getting back to my own bed.
Exactly.
Oh, delicious. Mm, yeah.
There's nothing like your own bed.
That's as good as a good meal, isn't it?
No,
that's lovely.
Sure.
Okay. Sleep has also got to do with consciousness and being unconscious and aware and dreaming. I don't know much about dreams. Sometimes I dream loads. Sometimes I dream very little. And daydreams. You know, the amount of creativity associated with daydreams. Mm. And I think that because, and I'm guilty of this as well, because people are scrolling on their phones, they've no time to daydream. They just don't let it happen.
So they're constantly stimulated yeah. by the phone.
So daydream is when we get our original ideas and insight. Insights are very important. What can I say about the wounded healer? Except hands up. And, you know, one of my patients this morning, we talked about the wounded healer. I think a large proportion of medical social services, people who work with wounded people are actually doing it so that we can dissolve our own wounds in other people's wounds. So other people's wounds appear to be bigger than us because we don't see well people in our surgeries. We see sick people. Mm. They're hurting. Right. So they can kind of make bearing our own wounds less hard. Mm. They don't make it easier, but they make it less hard. Okay. So if people are looking for a system that connects all of these aspects, these aren't facts. These are just kind of aspects. And, there's loads more. And people, please let us know how all this works for you. Because we might just find a key that might make a difference to somebody else who's listening. So we would love feedback on all of this. So the vagus nerve is the boss of fight, flight, freeze and fawn. Okay. We all know the fight or flight, right? There's I don't know who it's, a bull. In Ireland, or a Jack Russell Terrier, or a Doberman, you know. And I've known lovely Jack Russells, and I've known lovely Dobermans, you know. But a dog that you're scared of, something that you're scared of, or that's making a lot of noise, or that runs faster than you,
a big spider.
a big spider for Katrina. Okay, so fight or flight, that's it. You're either arms up, stamping on it, or, you know, giving it welly, or you are running for your life and jumping over a 5-bar fence. Okay. But what the other reaction, and these are reptilian responses. Mm. We don't sit and think, oh, I should run. Right. It's not. We're up and gone.
Run. Right.
That's it. So these are automatic reflex responses. We're not in charge of them. They just happen.
Yeah.
Right. And the other one is freeze. And this I've found so helpful for people over the years. I mean, the obvious one is if people are being abused or raped. And they freeze. And then they go and if they report it, or even if they don't, they're trying to figure this out in their head. And they kind of, I did nothing. I did nothing. Why did I not do nothing? And if you explain to them that they've no control over whether they fight, fright, or freeze, they go, oh. And again, that it helps relieve the judgment. So that's why I'm particularly saying this here, because there might be one person out there, or 10 or 100 people out there, who go, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it might be relevant to them, their friend, their cousin, their mother, their brother, you know, anybody, yeah, you know. Now, but the other one that's very interesting is fawning.
Okay, what's that all about?
Fawning is where you are in a situation, it's a bit like the chronic threat, where you have no power or control over your circumstances. Mm. And the person, there is a person or a system which constantly keeps you in your place. You can't protest, you can't escape, and you have to keep going, right? So you play nice, okay? And you fawn and you go, yes, of course. And yes, you know, how hot would you like your dinner? Or, you know, yes, I'll do everything, you know, and you can sit and order me about. So whether that's, I mean, the colonialization is absolutely classic, right? Any culture, see, the nations were all developed through colonialism, but any kind of, you could say the Untouchables in India, because I know this is something that's upheld by Christians, Muslims, and Hindus. So it's not a religious thing. It's kind of like a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a cultural colonization. It's a very complicated world we live in.
Yes.
So I don't want to oversimplify things,
yeah,
but it's that feeling that I can't say no, I can't escape, I can't make this. The only way of making this survivable is to actually go against my own instincts on a consistent basis, okay? And many people internalize this, like it's not even apparent to the outside.
Mm.
And it can often, again, be due to early childhood experiences.
Sure.
And it's very relevant to codependency, mm-hmm, as well. I said I would mention another 12-step program, which is Codependent Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would say the two addictions that are very, very prevalent are food addiction and codependency. And they often coexist with alcoholism, narcotics, like the expression of this kind of helplessness, trained helplessness, and craving, getting your needs met, is food addiction and codependency. But they're not respectable, and there's very few groups. There are groups,
mm-hmm,
but they're very few and far between.
Sure.
and not as recognisable. And I mean, I just to go on, I don't mind going on the record and saying that I attended Food Addicts Anonymous meetings. Drove an hour and a half there and back every Monday for 3 years.
Wow.
Learned a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. But then started looking at other ways of dealing with my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We all know what we mean by the stuff. We all know what we mean by the gremlins.
Yes, yes.
Don't
yes.
need those little buggers that sit on your shoulder. The gremlins sit on one and the angels sit on the other.
Yeah,
but which ones do we pay attention to?
Oh.
These ones.
Yeah.
Do we know the characteristics of those gremlins? These are not individual. This is consistent for all of our gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They speak in a monotone. They're sarcastic. They never have something new to say. It's always repeat, repeat, repeat. Judgmental. They have that judgmental tone. They're never genuinely funny. They never say anything which is, and they never say anything kind, right? And guys, send me in the other characteristics of your gremlins, because I think we'll find that, I know I've forgotten a few, but those characteristics are always there. Ah, I know another one. They're always worse when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Halt. So if the gremlins are driving you mad, guys, check in.
Mm-hmm.
Am I hungry? Am I lonely? Am I angry? Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Mm-hmm. Halt. So I hope that's useful. Mm. Now I was going to go on to the vagus nerve.
Yeah.
The vagus nerve is a nerve that originates in the brain and goes all the way down to the pelvis. One nerve. So you can see why it's called the vagus nerve, because it vagiarily goes down. It's a meandering herb.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That goes all the way down like a thick thread that gets thinner and thinner and thinner. What does it unite? It unites the heart, the voice, the digestion, the brain function, and also the reproductive system and sexual performance. Mm-hmm. And we all know how complicated that little bed of roses is. So the heart, the voice, mm-hmm. you know, when you get tense, you go like this and it all goes, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
The heart goes pounding or palpitations. Digestion goes up the creek. People get constipated or diarrhea or IBS or all kinds of things. And the brain. The brain goes into, you know, hyper alert, misery, depression, insomnia, all kinds of nonsense. It's not nonsense because it actually makes sense. The other thing that I think is very important for people's peace of mind is work, purpose, and structure. And all of those things without it being your identity.
I can seriously identify with that.
Nice play on words.
Yes.
the other thing about work is that people in the industrial world, people kind of act as though it's a dirty word. You know, and our houses are filled with labour-saving devices, and we can't even roll up our windows. They're all electric in the car. You know, people have push button to open the curtains. Wash the clothes, yeah. Wring the clothes. Yeah. We don't actually use our muscles for very much anymore. But what's wrong with labour? You know, I mean, I can identify with gardening. It's the kind of labour where I kind of go, God, I feel so much better after that. Okay.
Well, I would feel so much better after cleaning.
Yeah.
You know, like I would be cleaning the bathroom or kitchen or whatever. And it just completely clears out my mind. So, I understand when you're talking about your gardening, I'm talking about my cleaning in the house, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with that.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a good ring to it, does it?
No,
people don't go, oh, did you enjoy your work today?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. and the other thing is people now want to know what career you have. Whereas when I was young, people asked, what do you want to do for a living? Work is to provide for your needs and your family's needs. So some of the cleverest people I know, the ones who really know a thing or two, they do, like one example is, I know somebody who's a bin man, right? And his passion in life is martial arts. So he's jumping up and down off the bin lorry, you know, wheeling the bins out. I mean, even that doesn't take a huge amount of labour these days. Mm. But he's up at 6 o'clock in the morning and he's done 25,000, you know, jumpy uppies and
up and down.
So his way of making a living supports his passion in life, but it's not his passion.
Wow.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So somebody might have a job. I mean, if I knew then what I know now, I would make my living fixing washing machines.
Really?
Yeah, because they're not so heavy or unmanageable that a woman can do it for many years, mm-hmm. right? You can get these hydraulic lifts that lift them up table height, and then you fix them, and then you put them down, and then you have a step thing that puts them in the... No, I mean, heavy labor over many years is very hard on the body. I'm not talking about hard labor, right? So either that, or I'd be a panel beater, you know, or a painter, for car painter, right? Where you're very well paid for these jobs,
right?
And
okay.
Listen, with AI, guys,
yeah,
you know, an awful lot of desk jobs are going to be gone,
mm-hmm.
and people will still need their cars painted and their washing machines fixed.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
that I'm not, but I'm just saying. That this all links up with expectation, judgment, identity, success, and why we're living. Why we're doing for a living. Is it supporting our living? One thing I do sometimes with people is I say people kind of go, oh, I'm miserable since I got promoted. And I kind of go, well, did you need the money for the promotion? Mm. And they kind of go, what? You know, and I say, well, what was your purpose in accepting the promotion, right?
Sure.
and they don't relate, you know, the clever people kind of go, well, they were going to give me an extra €50 a month,
mm.
but the added responsibility would give me anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I said, no, thank you. Yeah, I love working for you. This is the bit I like doing. Many people transfer from people skills to management, and they're not the good guy anymore. They're the management, mm. you know, that everybody is whinging about.
Yeah, I know about that.
You know all about that.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I'm just saying I'm putting all this in the context of we don't just kind of go mental health. I mean, I did go mental in my 30s. Let me also, this is, I'm really coming out of the closet today, haven't I? Where it just broke. I just broke,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was so, see, if somebody's so unlucky, I was very lucky. And what broke was the heavy leg of the house broke,
mm-hmm.
and everybody could see how vulnerable I was.
Yeah.
Ooh, and I didn't like that one little bit.
I'd say not.
And I was very fortunate to see a psychiatrist who said, no, you don't need medication, you know, and I was going, but you can't leave me, like, you can't, you know, it'll be so cruel, it's horrible, you know, I need a dumper truck, a nuclear reactive dumper truck to cope with all of this. Mm. But I did see a very, very good psychotherapist. Twice a week for like three years,
mm-hmm.
right? It took a long time to empty that dumper truck.
Wow.
So, yeah, and part of that, and this is what I mean, mental health just doesn't arrive. Part of my reason for staying in it so long, you know, it didn't take me that long to be, you know, able to work and function in my life, but it did take a long time to unpack the story in a way that I could understand it. And that's how I see counselling as being, psychotherapy as being very useful. That was going to lead on to something intelligent, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah, our health in terms of how connected we are with ourselves, I think ourselves unfolds according to how we can do it.
Yeah.
Like nobody can say the wise thing where you go, oh, that's the key.
Yeah.
For me, we actually have to find all these little keys. So I'm just saying to people, these are some of the ways I found the keys to get out of trouble.
Like tools, your tools.
Tools. Yeah. Thank you. That's a really good way of putting it. So not simple. And then we're not responsible for the social structure that's around us, right? And my example of that is for women now, it's mainly women who want to be stay-at-home mothers. It's very different from being a stay-at-home mother in the 60s,
mm.
when everybody in the street was a stay-at-home mother, and you met people at the grocery store, you know, and down at the beach or in the park. And whereas now, you must have to work hard to find a network, mm-hmm. of other mums who are in the same situation. Now, does that mean? And I think being a stay-at-home mum is an honour and a privilege. And for those who it's their calling. It's their vocation. I think that's absolutely, you know, I absolutely support it 100%. Sure. I would make sure that their pension is paid into.
Absolutely.
I'm very practical. Okay. So, and that their work is appreciated in however that, whatever that means in that family. Yeah. Okay. So then I came up with other ways of looking at what to do. That's part of solutions. We've talked about food, stroking a pet. We've talked about how important pets can be, unless it's a goldfish, because they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Movement. I go to ecstasy dance on a Friday night when I can. And, you know, it's just fabulous. You know, you just, no rules, just, you know, keep on moving, bending, lie on the floor, kick your legs in the air. It's great. Physical therapies. I have a massage. Since the book was launched, not as regular as I have done, but I'm back in the system now. And this is the wounded healer. You know, not everybody needs all of these things, so people might choose the one or two that's most relevant to them. Food for me is making sure I get the good food so that the food cravings are less likely to be overwhelming. So physical therapies, some people are not massage people, they're more reflexology or even craniosacral or whatever. So that's all individual. Then meditation, reflection, prayer or mindfulness. In other words, shut the phone off.
Turn it off.
And listen to what is actually going on in your head. You don't have to stop it. People kind of go, oh, I can't stop my head. I sit there and my head goes bananas. I'm kind of going, yeah, let it go bananas. Don't worry, just keep breathing.
I think that's part of self-awareness though as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And I put down reflection because you're kind of going, yeah, that one. Oh, God, I did that the last time I felt like this. And, you know, it really didn't work, or it did work. Or, you know, then you're kind of recreating your own narrative.
Yes.
All right. Sometimes we get stuck in a narrative that's not helpful. Sometimes we kind of go, oh, I was abused or I was motherless or whatever. And sure, I'll never be this. And it's all, you know, we see the holes. We don't see the lace, you know. We see every story starts like this. So we have to I have had to retell the story, right?
Sure.
So I think that's important as well. And then where indicated, now for lots of people that I read through this list, they don't need counselling. They just need to go to bed on time. Sleep is the other one. They just need to go to bed a bit earlier, you know. They might need to eat some more sardines, you know, that kind of thing.
And the one thing I will say there, going to bed, and I can only talk for myself here, and I'm a culprit of it, turn off the phone or leave the phone in another room or charge it somewhere else. You're going to bed, you cut off. This is why I'd be very against having a TV in the room or any sort of device in the room, because that takes away from the lovely hours of sleep as well.
And sleep is when we heal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. When I was talking about the 12-step program, there's also one for creative people that are blocked. It's called the Artist's Way.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's very good. And a lot of this work is all about embodiment, coming back into our body, into our center, you know, center of gravity, heart, digestive system. It's all kind of going back to remembering being a toddler and, you know, rocking from side to side or putting your legs in the air and crossing them. You know the way toddlers do?
I know.
And that you're trying to kind of, God, what did that feel like? You know, and then you'll get a little kind of like, oh, that felt good. Oh, that felt really nice. Yeah. Okay, so getting embodied, the movement is very good for that. Mm. So what's likely to work? I don't know, try them all.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough, you know, and sometimes it's about doing that extra little bit of work so that you can afford to do something, or giving up something that's harmful so that you can afford to do something that's positive. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, people are putting two or three bottles of wine in the basket. And the alcohol has got so relatively cheap. It's nearly as cheap as chocolate now, you know, and they're equally bad for us. Stopping eating sugar makes a big difference to your mental well-being. So, yeah, over the years, I can tell you of times, and I've had a wonderful family relationship, three lovely children, but the food addiction has been like a thread that's just been misery making all the way through. Then the psychotherapy was needed after having a pneumonia, which, as I've spoken before, that's my weakness. That's when I know I'm vulnerable, and that's why I take care of it so well. The long period when I after the psychotherapy, when I thought, oh God, I'm all done now. That's me. I'm grand. Yep. You know, the food addiction is a pain in the arse, but you know, it's boring. But finding ways of, you know, trying not to hate myself really, and trying not to, on the really bad days, wish I was dead, you know, like whole days when you just kind of go. And I'm not alone. This isn't a sad story. Meanwhile, I enjoyed my work. I enjoyed the kids, you know. So it's not, we can be unwell and well at the same time in different proportions. You know, I think that's why I don't believe that there's this mental health. And you're 70% of people have a breakdown, according to the statistics. So, you know, I'm not claiming anything. I'm just coming out of the closet. Because other people, but the other thing is that I know my patients come in and they think, oh, she's got it all sorted. Even though I tell them, I don't, you know.
You don't believe you.
So the most recent, I think I've done, yeah, the ayahuasca, I did ayahuasca in a very safe space. Now, you need to check that you're in a safe space. I wouldn't go to South America because I wouldn't trust the tourism and what's genuine and what, unless I had an absolute, you know, gold thread of a recommendation as to the real thing. But the ayahuasca that we associate is not the same kind of cultural, it's not part of our culture. All right, but I did find it very interesting. It's a blend of plants that brings you into a transformative state, which can include
hallucinations.
Yeah. Kind of like, yeah, often described as like bright and gold mosaic kaleidoscope.
Okay,
kind of
okay,
that
yeah.
Kind of. Now I'll tell you, ayahuasca is not for the, it's not a pleasant experience. There are pleasant aspects of it, but a lot of the time you spent in the loo, you know, kind of, I can remember laughing in the middle of the night and going, God, I knew I was full of shit, but I didn't think I had that much. And you throw up, and it's not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's work. Doing any of this, guys, is work. Any of you who are part of their own trail or whatever. But it was interesting. And, you know, I'm glad I did it. Then COVID happened. I kind of thought at the time, I have this thing with numbers that I have an instinct about them. So if a safe environment came up, I'm not saying I'd never do it again. Then I revisited counselling because of issues to do with other family members. So that was like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe not that long. COVID, it's very hard to tell what was before COVID or after COVID anyway, which I'm very grateful for, because I realised I was only half cooked. Do you know, I was, you know, I was still struggling significantly. And the most, here's an interesting story. My most recent kind of exploration of this area of seeking a non-judgmental contentment that I would wish for myself and other people, and certainly the judgment. It's never been a big problem. I was too busy judging myself to be judging other people. But certainly let go of that. And that's the holotropic breathing. And I told you I was on a retreat this weekend, and it was holotropic breathing. And holotropic breathing, guys, this big secret, the way to get into a transformative morphosis of is actually with breathing, supported in a therapeutic environment, in the same way that they're proposing to use psychedelics like psilocybin, right? Now, personally, I'd much rather have whole mushrooms than psilocybin. But psilocybin, every culture has its hallucinogenic substances, right? The medical profession has used them, abused them, dropped them. They're now picking it up again. But they're picking it up using an extract of psilocybin, one of the chemicals, and using it on the most severe resistant refractive depression or problem. Now, they are using it with the psychotherapy support, you know, so that is very positive.
Sure.
But I would do it differently, guys. Yes. But there you go. That's me. So I have to say this has made an enormous difference to the qualitative sense of myself. It's not a journey I'd recommend for everybody. Mm. It's self-generated in that you breathe to a system of music which is designed for therapeutic connection within yourself. It's a very safe environment. People can find out about holotropicbreathing.ie. Mm-hmm. The centre I go to is in Westport or in Wicklow. Mm-hmm. It's the same group of people. Sometimes it's hard to find it on the website. I'll send it to you, the connection. Yeah. Because I believe there's people advertising holotropic breathing using headphones, you know, with 50 people in a room at the same time. And that's not the kind of psychotherapy support that you need for a safe, transformative experience, in my opinion. Right, so you can see all of my opinions in here. But I've earned my opinions.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm hoping they'll be helpful for other people.
Okay.
Now, here's the funny thing. When I was about 20, I was not wanting to go home for Christmas. Everybody I was living with was going elsewhere. And I was left on my own. And I looked around me and I saw the windowsill had evergreen branches, some twinkly lights, and mandarin oranges. And I looked at that windowsill and I thought, now, that's all I ever need for a happy Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I am never, ever going to have an unhappy Christmas. Now, you can ask anybody in my family, have I ever had an unhappy Christmas? No. I don't let anybody else's dramas over the years. It's just been, oh, look, I've got this imaginary fir tree, mandarin oranges and whatever. And it's kind of like, kick off all you want, guys. You know. Now, having explored much of this and reaching a significant age, I can say that over the years I've thought to myself, geez, that's really funny. Why did I not say, once I have, you know, the basics in life, which are very important for our security of a home, warmth, safe environment that we can sleep, and good food. Look, that's core. Okay, so you do your best to create that environment or get help in order to do it. And that's what I would wish for everybody.
Brilliant,
right? And I thought, why did I not say, I'm going to, you know, once I have those, I'm going to be happy every day. I'm never, ever going to be unhappy. And it was only this weekend that I realized I didn't have the toolbox, you know. Yeah. So I might say 25 things and you might only be able for a half of one of them. Or you might have your own thing, mm-hmm. you know, where you go and that gives you a tool and then you add another tool and then you take 3 months having a reaction, you know, because we don't want to give up these habits. We don't want to give up our miseries. Misery loves company, our own company.
Breeds content.
Right. Yes, sometimes people are melancholy and they love it. Mm. They love being melancholy and they love being miserable. Now, I would be the last person to not support somebody who is having any kind of mental health work that needs supporting or crisis or whatever. But there are people who get great joy in being miserable and spreading misery. It's their modus operandi. Mm. And that's what keeps them in their stuff. So I've no judgment about it. But I don't dwell in it. I don't seek it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I kind of go, and I would never be unkind.
Yes.
So please don't think that I wouldn't be, you know, and I would annoy the hell out of them because they'd say, oh, well, the rain is shocking. And I'd kind of go, yes, the plants love it. They avoid me. Right, actually, that's what happens because I kind of go, isn't it shocking the way the government are going, oh, they're doing their best, you know, and they avoid me because they don't have good company for their misery, if you know what I mean. I've only just realised that, actually. That's very funny. I've done a diagram.
Hold it up to the screen.
Because I don't think I've even yet come to the heart of the matter. And where our heart is to do with openness, generosity, kindness, starting with ourselves alongside the people in our lives. And we know all of this because the gut, the heart and the brain are all in a circle. Can people see that?
Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
So it's a very bad anatomical drawing of a brain. On the top right-hand side, mm-hmm. left-hand side, for people who are driving in their cars. And then the heart in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then to the other side is the gut. Right? So we know that physiologically they're interconnected. Mm-hmm. But we know that's what I call the triangle. Mm-hmm. That's a mental health triangle.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Now, this emerged today. I've never done this before.
What's this now?
But it looks like a funnel.
That's what I was just about to say to you. Yeah. Is that a funnel?
Yeah. No, that's never emerged before.
Right.
You know, anytime I've used this kind of illustration before. But I think that's all the tools, you know, that we just pour in.
Mm.
Because the tools aren't like spanners. It's more like a fluid energy, an energetic kind of transformation, mm-hmm. you know, that we're looking for. I have this fantasy that, you know, I'll have it all sorted. I'll have the meaning of life and all the rest of it. And I'll sit up in bed when I'm 98 and I'll go, I got it. And then,
heel over.
Yeah. So the point of that is that it's process. I don't expect to wake up one morning blissful, you know, content. I look through the day and I go, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. Didn't time that very well, but I'll be okay and I can rest tomorrow, or so that it's kind of consistently waking up to a day that I've shaped sufficiently. You know, there's times in life you can't do this. You know, if you've got three toddlers under five, you're like riding the wave. But even then you're going, I'm going to have fun with these kids. That's why I had them.
Mm.
You know, that's important as well. And you do, but it's tiring. That's tiring. You know, that's hard work.
Sure.
And, you know, lots of challenges in life. There's always anxieties. There's always three anxieties. If you've got five anxieties, you need to work on reducing them to three. And if you've got three anxieties that are like, woo, you need to learn the ways of lowering the
bar.
Yeah, the hook. Mm. There's like three hooks. I point people to the hooks. There's three hooks on the back of my door in the clinic.
Mm.
And I go, so you don't want there to be five hooks. Because that's more than anybody can deal with. Mm. Three is average. If it's one or two, holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ever going to wake up to none? I don't think so. But guys, tell me your secret if you do.
Yes. We'd love to hear from you.
We would. All right. Will I let these? Oh, no, I'm not going to let them go yet. Because I have another book.
Okay, let's go.
This book is Crossing Zero.
Mm-hmm.
By Aaron Sorensen. And this is for people who, it's the art and science, see, all medicine is art and science, of coming off and staying off psychiatric drugs.
Ah, okay. That sounds interesting.
Now, I want to put a rider to this. The most important thing is don't do it on your own and don't do it fast.
Yeah, okay. Of course.
But this gives you all of the knowledge to figure it out, with your medical team. I mean, I would say that as a herbalist, you know, herbs have a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. I had a patient this morning who came, and her main reason for coming to see me was to stop her antidepressants. Mm-hmm. She made the appointment in December, by February. And I said, I didn't realize she'd written it in February. So I thought, no, next February. God, she's really in tune, right, to be doing this by next February. Yeah. What's the hurry? Right. Mm-hmm. But this will explain why you want to tailor and taper it off very slowly. Otherwise, you can get withdrawal symptoms that are reinterpreted, that are interpreted as a recurrence of the illness. Mm. Whether it's an illness or not, wonderful. The whole last third of the book is about how to use a lot of the tools that I've been describing.
Yes.
Right. They're very familiar to me from my own personal experience, but also from all the studies and the help and the feedback from patients. Thank you. All my patients who have taught me some of this, wonderful, wonderful. So, yeah. Very practical, and you can bring this with you to your medical team and say, this is how I want to do it, and I want your support to do it. Now, the other thing that it doesn't say, and there's two things it doesn't say in this book. One is that a lot of people might not be able to go to zero, but if you reduce your medication from 90 milligrams to 30 milligrams, that's a huge benefit in terms of reducing unwanted effects. So that's a great winner.
Yeah.
Right? Again, you see, I'm not one or the other, either or, black or white. What was the other thing? Yeah, the herbs can have a lot to offer. But an excellent excellent reference for, and very useful for any therapists, because they often, it's a great description of how the medications work.
Yes.
No,
looks
I do
like a
remember
very interesting
it.
Book.
I do remember it. It's that this patient this morning, it was against her values to be on these medications. And she felt better on them.
Right.
And I'm going, the right medicine is the one that works for you with the least side effects or unwanted effects in accordance with your values. So you're the boss. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's number one. And this can be, you can go through this with a curiosity. Do I need this medication? Mm-hmm. Right? And it might be that you do. I say to people, they'll still be in the shops. I can still write a prescription for you. Your doctor can still write a prescription. Nobody is taking them away. You're not being deprived. Mm. Because the minute we start feeling deprived, what do? We get obsessed, right, with our own miseries. they might recur and it might be terrible. And we frighten ourselves. Mm-hmm. So this is just a story. This is a story that you're investigating. Mm-hmm. And this gives you great knowledge and tools in order to explore.
Brilliant, yeah.
Okay.
It looks like a great book.
Yeah, great, yeah.
And not to forget your own lovely book, Uprooted Medicine, A Revealing History of Medicine That Restores Herbs to Patient-Led Care. A great book to read and a great book to get through. And it's so informative and Dealish. And Tim spent 10 years researching it and doing all so much work on this amazing book. And it's up on, what's the...
Joined Up Medicine.
JoinedUpMedicine.com. You can buy it there. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Along with other places.
Yes.
And you can order it in your local bookshop.
Oh, you can.
We love that too. Yeah.
We love that as well.
Okay, guys.
Thank you so much.
Stay well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Herb Doctor podcast with Dealish, Dr. Dealish and myself. And we would love to hear from you on your thoughts, even on this subject that Dealish talked about today. We'd love to hear anything that you'd like to share with us. You can get in contact with us through all social media platforms. And please like and share and follow the podcast. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Katrina.
Bye for now.
Bye.